It's not a place for me to continue living, and I couldn't go back to Chad. I couldn't go back to my country because it was still at war. I attempted again in November 2019 to cross the Mediterranean. At this point, I was forcibly again intercepted and returned back to Libya. Then in 2019, there was a Libyan civil war which started, and once again, I was forcibly conscripted to fight in the Libyan war because for the militias, for the military powers, migrants like me, asylum seekers, refugees, are a shield to be used whenever there is a confrontation between militias. I survived from this until April 2020 with all this COVID pandemic. But I tried again for the third time to cross the Mediterranean. I was rejected. I tried again for the fourth time to cross the Mediterranean. From the Italian waters, I was rejected and sent back to Libya to experience the same circle of humiliation that I have been talking about. Within also this fourth attempt that I made to cross the Mediterranean, two of them, they were loss of life. The one in August 2020, my boat capsized and 76 people died. Each of these persons who died were persons like me with simple ambition, who wanted to exist in a non-violent society. They wanted to become entrepreneurs. They wanted to become teachers, interpreters. They wanted to become someone in a society. But as a result, today they are in the depths of the Mediterranean. And it's a question, it's a constant question to me. It remained a constant question. What happened to these people? Where are these people? Why do they deserve to be left in the depths of the Mediterranean without having any sort of recognition? The fourth attempt I made, 42 people died, and I survived. After living all through these experiences, I gave up because I felt really hopeless. I had tried everything to try to leave Libya legally. It was not doable because I was met with visa restrictions. I was not recognized. I'm questioned where I'm coming from, what is the level of my education. At this point, it was a time to understand, to sacrifice something, to try to go back to the Libyan society, to understand something. It was necessary for me to start understanding what are the perceptions from the Libyan common people. How do they see me? Why do I lack this recognition from them? At this point, I started to work with the Libyan civil society step by step, and I understood it. After understanding that for them, I am an invader because this is what their politicians tell them. I moved on and I started to work with the international organizations. I started to volunteer for my community to try to give a voice to understand what was happening. I approached IOM because I understood that in most of these scenarios, they have access to these detention centers in Libya, but their own concern and their aim is to repatriate people back to the countries where they're coming from. I started to volunteer with them to understand the structures, why they are not amplifying the voices of these violations which is happening in Libya. After understanding this structure, I gave up with them and I started to work again with the UNHCR. I worked with them for several months to understand what is happening. First, when we talk about UNHCR, they have legal mandate, at least why the UNHCR was initiated in Geneva here in 1951 was to give shelter to people like me who flee their countries and don't have the space. It was to advocate for persons like me to access education in a host community, to have access to the basic rights as a person in a society. But in Libya, it was something that never existed because the system has been hijacked. After understanding that the UNHCR does not work for our interest, I stopped working with them and I went back again to the Libyan civil society where we imagined to create a space where we could try to bring together the refugee communities, the migrant populations and the common people of Libya to try to understand our difficulties, to try to address this and to question authorities how we should address this and how we want to be seen in a society. But this dream again did not really survive. After 1 month of this experience, the neighborhood where I was living was attacked by the Libyan authorities. on the 1st of October 2021. It was a home to tens of thousands of people, persons like me. It was a makeshift. Makeshift in the sense that we never had the ability to afford luxury houses, and even if we did have money to rent houses, we were never able to be recognized because of the documents that we have. Asylum certificate, we cannot access public services in Libya, we cannot access schools, we cannot access jobs. So we were left to live in these makeshift buildings. Yet once again, because Libya wanted a full control over the body of our women, of our young men to work in this lucrative business and be exploited, the neighborhood was overnight attacked. Armored cars, drones were flying all over our homes, and people were rounded up in a very violent and non-discriminative way. Non-discriminative in the sense that women were not recognized, children were not recognized in these violent actions, elderly people, disabled, were not recognized. They were rounded up in a very inhuman way and sent to detention centers, which are known for severe human rights violations. For this, I want to give you an example, just an iceberg of how the scenario looked like.
The Libyan government in Tripoli billed it as a war on crime in the southwest of the city. Complete with rousing soundtrack, the army and the police were going to clean up no-go neighborhoods like Gargaresh, a locality notorious for crime and prostitution.
احنا بننط في الاوكار رقم واحد لا عندكم الوكر في المخدرات في الـ في الـ في الحشاك كل اللي تسمع به هذا موجود في قرقان
Makeshift buildings built on public land were being rented out to thousands of migrants and refugees trying to get to Europe but stuck in Libya. But then an unintended plot twist in the edit. Women, children, young men face down in the dirt. More than 5,000 migrants and refugees were rounded up. The UN reported that one migrant was shot dead, 15 others injured, and thousands brought to detention centres, including 215 children and nearly 600 women, 30 of whom are pregnant. We asked refugees and migrants to send us their videos and testimony of the operation. There is no soundtrack on their footage. Just someone banging on the door of the Al Mabani detention centre, trying to get out. This was filmed a week ago. By some estimates, the numbers of detainees in Tripoli's migrant centres have doubled in the last 7 days.
They came around 2 a.m. in the morning at night when we are sleeping.
People like Peter from South Sudan escaped the raids by hiding in some bins. Along with hundreds of others, made his way to the UNHCR's community center in Tripoli looking for help. Himself and his friends filmed the scene there for us today. Many have a UNHCR certificate, proof that they're bona fide asylum seekers. A piece of paper that if you're Peter, you hold on to tight.
The government of Libya, they just turned their back against us. That's why we fear even they don't respect this page. Just from 2 meters away from here, as I go, they can just arrest me immediately. So they don't respect this page.
As we were speaking, Peter and his friends told us about a mass escape from a detention center in Tripoli in which migrants were shot and killed. We cannot confirm whether anyone died in this incident, but this footage sent to us this evening from outside a detention center in the west of the city has what sounds like gunfire. Local media is reporting that over 3,000 people broke out of detention centres in Tripoli in the last few hours. Most escaped. Others were released because, according to the authorities, they weren't able to feed them.
I mean, there is many more things to show, but it's just telling you that the people who are being fought in this violent way are vulnerable persons who had left their country and come to Libya to seek refuge. People who are not armed. How can you shoot someone? How can you use Kalashnikov to attack women in such a way that they are looking for protection, they are looking for a place to be welcomed? So after this incident on October 2021, persons like me, I was among the very few people who survived, and I went immediately to the UNHCR headquarters in Tripoli because it was the only place to call home, it was the only shelter, they were the only institution giving us the asylum certificate. So when I went there, I knocked on their door and I told them that I need protection. The whole neighborhood which was attacked, the people who were living in this neighborhood were persons of concern to the office of UNHCR, which means that we had expected them to announce a state of emergency, because 10,000 people, 20,000 people cannot be treated in such a way that the UNHCR, the UN, the United Nations, the human rights organizations are not talking about it. At this point, they told me that they had limited mandate to operate in Libya, and therefore they cannot give me any protection. But when I left their building and I looked outside, I saw miserable faces of women, children, people who were shot at, and they got wounded during the incident. And they were asking the same question, that they're looking for protection. At this point, we also did not see any media presence. There were no media coverage about what was happening. It was only on the local televisions, because we were a subject of mockery to the Libyan people. We were being played, naked women, children, has the action that you see here, as if we were a bunch of terrorists being subject to this attack. At this point, we understood that it was necessary to organize ourselves by ourselves and for ourselves. That being said, we came together as 11 different nationalities, 4,000 people. We started to organize ourselves to deal with bilingual issues, how to come together, how to make this voice heard. After coming together and having protested for 1 week in the street without any attention, we started to question, how do we get out of this situation? All media houses were blocked, the government forces, they blocked every media entry to come to access the place where we were camping. And then we had to think out of the box to use what was available at our disposal. Therefore, we started to explore the power of social media. And I'm happy to tell you that today we started giving ourselves a voice through this mobile cell phone, that in the street we created a Twitter page under the name Refugees in Libya, because it was the only way for us to reach politicians. We understood that Twitter is a place where politicians are actively engaging and they use this propaganda. We wanted to be the center of our voice, to question all these things, to tell the realities, to tell their stories, which does not correspond to what the politicians tell us or the journalists who are corresponding to what is happening in Libya tells the general public, all in a filtered way. At this point, we started to have a voice. We started to have people who recognized the situations. There were civil societies here in Europe, sea rescue organizations, because it was a point of interest for them also to understand where we are coming from, because they cannot only continue to rescue people, document all these stories without understanding what is happening in Libya. Why do people find it inhabitable? At this point, they started to show solidarity, and church group also started to show solidarity. To mention a few, Pope Francis of Italy started to speak to us. We had to telephone him, and he responded by giving us this little recognition, which was not sufficient to deal with the Libyan militias. Throughout these struggles, we continued to fight, and we continued to amplify our voices. And it was not only amplifying our voices. We were looking for accountability. We were looking for recognition. And before having to be given this recognition, we had to give it for ourselves, to stay in the street, to tell them that by giving this recognition to ourselves, it means that we had to stay in the street under all circumstances to resist whatever forces that was coming to attack us and our women. After having this recognition, we had to push for the demand of evacuation, because Libya as a country did not want to accept us. Europe has a country, has a nations that has come together to combat immigration in a very destructive manner. It did not accept us. On the Mediterranean, we were subsequently intercepted and sent back to Libya, where we were systematically detained and put into several kind of exploitation market. At this point, we were calling for accountability, that the people who have committed these crimes, the European heads of state, the Libyan people, they should be held accountable. Well, at the same time, we were pushing the UNHCR to stand up to its mandate, because it has not been voicing out the situation which we have been living in Libya. All things that have been filtered, migration policies have been designed without us. It's being designed by academics, people who go to school and learn on school, and they make these policies. But in reality, we were the first, and we are the first persons to experience this on our bodies. At this point, we were questioning and we started to make demands. We started to write to the Libyan authority, to the African Union, to the European Union. And for the first time in Libya, as migrants and refugees, we were able to sit and negotiate with the Libyan authority. We sat with them and negotiated the situation to start liberating the people who were detained. Women were released from detention centers, and several detention centers were closed, including Al-Mabani, which was a very infamous and notorious prison. But this was not enough, because we had to continue asking for this recognition, and we had to continue to ask that whatever country that it is, has Libya, even if it is not a signatory to the Geneva Convention, it has legal obligations to protect and respect the rights of foreign nationals within their territory. These also, they have failed to do it. In this process, we engaged with several dialogues. Well, at the same time, we were having a lot of repressions from the militias. There is a lot of things here that I don't want to show. I'm trying to compromise not to show these violent scenes. Each of these days, we were experiencing violence from the militias as they came to try to evacuate the camp. But we resisted for 3 consecutive months. And 3 consecutive months, it was a huge circle of a struggle where people, women, lived without food. We didn't have access to toilets. We were peeing in the streets. Children were sick and they couldn't access medical services. People were dying every day. Some had committed suicide, and there were newborns being born in the street. So if I'm not afraid of my time, I will try to go. So when I was talking about recognition, it was necessary for us to come together like this, people with different backgrounds, people from 11 nationalities, to have these daily assemblies to know what we want. We as the people, if we talk about recognition, what type of recognition do we want? If we talk about evacuations, which country do we want to be evacuated to? Do we want to go back to our countries, which doesn't exist? Do we want to stay in Libya, a country that is constantly instrumentalizing us? Or do we want to come to Europe, which country in Europe? So it was a question to understand that if we are calling for evacuation, it is again to the international community to render us the service of solidarity, to say that we as the common people in Zurich, we want to take 50 people from Libya who have been subjected to this kind of violence. It was in this spirit that we continued to protest and to make noise, to give signal that we are here, we are human beings, and we want to be recognized. At the same time, when I'm talking about solidarity and support, I think our European friends, the people who were able to give us this sort of recognition, there was an act of solidarity. Fundraisers were organized during these days, and donations were channeled to us, to Libya, to be able to provide food, to be able to provide medicines. That helped us a lot to resist for these 3 consecutive months where we were in the street. It was not enough to feed 4,000 people, but it was still a sort of recognition that we longed for, and it was able to provide a hope to people to keep resisting, that even if we are not recognized politically, at least the common people in Europe, the very few who understand the situation, already give us this recognition. So, okay, I will come back to this. So I need to jump a little bit. Sorry. Okay. So what I'm talking about, I think it is necessary to give you an idea what it means when we are talking about militias. The person that you see here, I'm having my little bag which was full of papers and medicines. The person that I'm facing is a militia, Muhammad Al-Khoja, who is very known, and he's been supported by the Italian authority throughout recent years. And he comes to Italy and makes an agreement about immigration. He's the current manager of this what they call illegal immigration, which we don't call it illegal immigration. We are just being lacked the opportunity to migrate in a very safe way. So this is Muhammad Al-Khoja. Every single day we were experiencing repression from them. They come and they try to shoot at us, to frighten us, and to try to kick us out. But it was also a point where we had to tell them that if you want to kill us, you must kill us here, and we are not going anywhere. But at the same time, it prompted to the loss of life. People were shot every day. I didn't want to bring the image of this person. Each time that they came and they couldn't evacuate the camp, people were shot at and they died. And it was a constant fear that we lived in. But once again, we had to continue resisting in the hope that we can be heard, we can be recognized in this particular crazy society. We had to continue there with the call for democracy, endless assemblies, which was the power. It was the backbone of our structures, that people, regardless of our nationalities, regardless of the languages that we spoke, we had a common goal, because there was something that we experienced on our bodies. Women, children, young men, elderly, people who had lived in Libya for a number of years have never truly lived a life because they were just existing. To live a life means that you are free in a society, but it was never our case, and we wanted to understand this. We became a pity to the passersby. You see that these makeshift tents were by the sidewalk of Tripoli, in the highways where cars were passing, and there were lack of shelters. Newborns that I'm talking about, children were being born in the street, and it's a pleasure to say that with all these experiences, we became nurses. We became the first person to give life to such children in the street, because we couldn't access hospitals. We had to do what was necessary in the street and to give chance to life. What I talk about in the streets, of course, people drive lethally. People are traumatized. They do not look light and left when they are crossing the street. As we set our camp in the two sidewalks in front of the UNHCR, people every day were subject to car accidents. Young children, has 7, has 16, has from different nationalities, were subject to car accident, and they lost their life in the search for recognition. And this for us was already a point of strength to continue fighting, that it doesn't end here. Even if the last single person dies, we die for recognition. And it was necessary to continue in this spirit. So in the street, of course, I cannot say we lived entirely under constant recognition from the common people. They were also aggressive, because 4,000 people in a certain neighborhood continuously making noise, asking, beating things, and chanting all the night, evacuations, we need protection, we need recognition. The neighbors started to react aggressive towards the people, because they wanted to have their own peace. They wanted to sleep well, which we were not giving them. But at the same time, circumstance did not allow us to be peaceful, to be able to allow them to sleep. It was in this spirit that we approached them, and we won their hearts, that the common people, the the local people of that particular neighborhood in Tripoli started to show solidarity because they understood that what the politicians have been telling them is not true. They understood that we do not deserve to be put in such circumstances. They started to provide shelter, they started to provide food, they started to provide several kind of support, and they started to even amplify our voices. They started to use their private social platforms to tell their stories of refugees as it happened in the street. This was what the Libyan authority did not want. So this pushed them to come and violently dismantle the camp on the 22nd, on the 10th of January last year, 2022. The protest was violently evicted, and persons who were there were taken again to inhuman detention camp. One of them was in Zara. At least 700 people were rounded up that night and taken to detention centers. They were mostly women and children who could not escape the attack from the militias. And just to give you an idea, I think I will go back to the first,
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم بتاريخ 2022 شهر 1 تسعة كما تشاهدون الآن وكما تعلمون نحن كلاجئين موجودين في دولة ليبيا شهور كانت فاتت حصل لنا كشة وقتل لنا كمية من المهاجرين و
Just to stop, I don't know if there is an Arabic translation, but yes, in this case, I will just wrap up.
Somalia and Eritrea,
I think I didn't choose the right video, but no problem. So, so when the protest was violently evicted, people were subject to several kind of human rights violations. But again, I survived. I don't know how many lives I have had through this journey. I survived the attack, and I was again the one of the co-founders of this protest movement, and I was the spokesperson. But once it was evicted, I became a threat to the Libyan authority to the national security, as they said. This was their claim, and I woke up overnight, and my pictures, my videos were all published over the newspaper in Libya and the national television. The security apparatus were looking for me because I was perceived as a threat for organizing such a voice that was able to reach the international community, even if how small it was. At this point, I went into hiding, but still I continued to advocate, I continued to amplify what I was experiencing and what other people were being subject to go through. I was subjected to 3 attacks from the Libyan authority. The first attack was a severe gunshot in the apartment where I was living, and 2 people died. I survived that. And again, there was another attack. This was around March 2022. And again, 1 person lost their life. At this point, I had approached the European authority, several countries. I approached Italy to issue me a humanitarian visa to come to Europe legally because my life was at risk. Even very different human rights organizations were advocating and trying to push for my evacuation out of the country. But once again, I was rejected. I was not given visa. Lawyers in Italy from ASG took my case to Rome Tribunal Court. I was again rejected. The case was rejected, and I was left to Libya to experience this constant hunt down from the militias. I approached the German embassy. I failed. They didn't recognize me as a person. I was again rejected. It remained a question, how do I get out of these situations? It was a point of suicide because I was looking at the Mediterranean again as a sign of hope. I had to turn to smugglers, and I had to put my life on the rubber dinghy boat for the 5th time. I manage it. And last year, I finally made it to Italy in June. And after arriving, I think...